Ahoy, seafood aficionados, and welcome aboard Decoding Seafood by Moe, your compass to all things oceanic. Again, proudly brought to you by Moe. I'm your host, George Duran, and today we're about to embark on a mouthwatering journey into the fine art of pairing wines with your favorite ocean delights. In fact, if you've ever felt like a fish out of water trying to pair wines with seafood, well, fear not. Today, we're diving deep into the ocean of wine wisdom to ensure you not only pair like a pro, but sound like a sommelier superstar while doing it. So get ready to reel in the secrets of seafood and wine harmony, because we're serving up the perfect pairing platter with a side of wisdom. So joining us today on this flavorful voyage is none other than the wine whisperer himself, the master sommelier extraordinaire, John Young from Southern Glazier's Wine and Spirits of Maryland. John, how are you today?
Doing great, George. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're absolutely very excited to have you because, you know, the one thing that I can tell you that a lot of people come up to me as a chef is what wine goes with what I'm cooking. And we're going to discuss a little bit about that. But let's talk about your credentials first. When I first received an email from you, there were a lot of letters, you know, usually doctors have them, the MDs and the DSS for the dentist. Well, you have CSW, CSS, FWS, IWP, SWS. It sounds like you know a thing or two about wine.
You know, every time I learn something about wine, I realize there's two more things that I don't know. So I'm never going to get bored. Yeah, that's a business email, so I keep those little credits I've received on the email signature. But yes, I'm a certified specialist of wine and certified specialist of spirits with the Society of Wine Educators. With the Wine Scholar Guild, I've done Spanish Wine Scholar and French Wine Scholar. And with Italian Wine Central, I've done Italian Wine Professional. I've done a few other things as well, like certified sherry wine specialist. I am a certified sommelier. I'm not a master sommelier, but I am a certified sommelier.
You're getting there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so you're mentioning all these countries, and this is the one thing about wine and studying in France myself, culinary school in France. It was absolutely wild to think the variety of wines alone in France alone. And we're talking about different countries. We're talking about different vines. We're talking about different regions. Why is wine so damn complicated sometimes?
Because there's so many different types of wine. I mean, there's so many different types of grapes just to start with. Italy alone has over 1,000 different varietals. And that's just one country. You know, wines have been made for thousands of years. And many different climates, including many marginal climates where a lot of wine thrives. So you're looking not just at all the different grapes that are out there, but the different climates and terroir, soil, and areas that it grows in. And then the different styles of wine that the winemaker himself can choose, whether you're using, you know, more common things like oak aging, keeping the wine sweet, having bubbles of the wine, things of that nature, different blending and different blending techniques. So there's a myriad of different ways to make wine and a ton of different grapes out there to play with.
When you walk into a wine shop to choose wine for your dinner, is there a particular region you always kind of gravitate towards, more the older world, the European, or do you kind of just, do you like the American wines? Like, where do you gravitate towards?
Me personally, I tend to go more towards whatever I haven't had recently. I always want to try different things and new things. For instance, there's thousands of different producers of Chardonnay out there. There's a lot of great ones. They're not all are great. So if you've had one Chardonnay, that doesn't mean that all Chardonnay is bad. I would encourage you to try others. So I'm going to try a lot of things I haven't had before or haven't had much. That said, within that, I always try to consider who's going to be joining me and drinking the wine with me and what their taste and palate is. But if it's just for myself, I do tend to gravitate more towards old world wine, which mainly wines from Europe or that could include Asia, simply because those wines tend to be a little bit less fruit forward, a little bit less alcohol, a little bit less body. They tend to have a little bit more acidity to them, and they tend to have more flavors that go beyond just fruits, which can add to the complexity of the wine. And all those things tend to make them a little bit better with food pairing. There's exceptions to this, of course, but sometimes when a wine gets to be overly extracted, overly fruit forward, overly alcoholic, it limits what sort of food you can have.
Do you ever drink boxed wine? Be honest.
I'm sure that I have.
You just don't remember because you drank so much of it?
I'm sure. Well, fortunately, I come from a background coming up in restaurants, and I work with distributing wine to restaurants and hotels. And I get access to a lot of wine and try a lot of wine. And I certainly will drink wine that's in the same price point as boxed wine. But I wouldn't say that I had any boxed wine very recently.
Yeah, and one of the things I learned tasting wine throughout France is that they have this kind of long-standing years, hundreds of years of methods of growing wine. And the government is very strict about changing any rules and when they can harvest and press the grapes. In the United States, we don't have those rules. How can that governing body that kind of controls the quality of wine, how can that affect the quality of the wine where they're growing, particularly here in the United States, where there are no rules?
Well, I think there's benefits to both. In Europe, where a lot of the French, or a lot of the wine law comes from, a lot of it was based off the French model. And they have that not just for wine, but for cheeses and other items. It's a great way with that regulation to kind of guarantee quality. It can then also kind of guarantee some recognition to regions that are better suited for certain styles of wine or certain grapes. A lot of other countries like Spain and Italy, Portugal, they use the French model and made their own adjustments. You have a couple other countries like Germany and Austria, which are such marginal growing climates. Their model's a bit different based upon the ripeness of the grapes. So it helps kind of build some recognition, build a reputation, and maintain some quality with the European model. When you work with more of the United States model, some of the more New World models of wine law, they still have a number of different wine laws. They're not quite as stringent, as you mentioned, but that allows you a bit more freedom, and you can try new things, come up with things that haven't been done before, and you know, it's maybe lets you be a little bit more artistic in some respects, a little more creative as the winemaker, and you can come up with things that are really new and interesting. And the line between old world and new world wine, and again by old world I mean wines from Europe and Asia and new world anywhere else, is getting more and more blurred. That includes from the way wine is expressing itself with climate change, to even wine law. So there's a well-known group of wines in Italy called the Super Tuscans. It's not a formal term, but those are people that wanted to eschew some of the Italian wine law in Tuscany and make wines that didn't fit within that criteria. They were making world-class wine. Yeah. So you're seeing that wine blurred more and more. It has been for a while, but I think those are kind of the two points of difference between them, but I think they both have their own set of positives. Just different ones.
Interesting. Sometimes I notice, well, I'm sure you notice a lot too, a lot of people who just drink terrible wine, or at least in your opinion, perhaps terrible cheap wine or just not good wine. Why do we drink bad wine at times? Why do you look around and you're just like, I cannot believe they're serving this, or I cannot believe they're enjoying it genuinely? Is it all... does it boil down to marketing? Is it just ignorance? Why do we drink so much bad wine sometimes?
I'm sure marketing plays a huge role in it. I don't think a lot of thought maybe gets put into it. It's kind of what you're exposed to. I kind of got into and discovered wine completely by accident. I don't come from a family that were huge wine drinkers. I just kind of lucked into it. So I think if you're brought up eating McDonald's a lot, you maybe don't seek out what would a burger be like if you had with Kobe or Wagyu beef. If you're just grow up in a house where you don't have a lot of wine, or you just first started drinking and you were young and didn't have a lot of money, you're buying jug wine, or at friends and family's houses, they're pouring cheap wines or old wines. You're not really questioning it. You're not exposed to other types of wine. And, you know, marketing's a big thing. You look at grapes like Merlot or Chardonnay, which are easy to say, and they make world-class wine for a reason, but people will take those wines and start making them because they know that they can make money on it. And then marketing gets behind. That's what you see a huge selection of in stores. So it's also what's available. And what people can afford. I mean, how many people have expendable income to drink world-class wine or wines that are just a little bit more elevated. It may not be that important to them, but there's a lot of great wine out there that we haven't heard of and that isn't that expensive, and wines that are a little bit more expensive that are worth, I think, the investment to try to see if you can appreciate that or if that find something new and exciting.
Well, one of the gripes that I have with the American wine industry or the vineyards is when you go to France, when you go to a vineyard directly where they're literally growing the wine and not necessarily pressing it, but they have the wines there, it's, you know, half a quarter of the price than what you would go into the city and purchase wine at the vineyard itself. And the tastings are mostly free. Here in the United States, it's kind of the opposite. I've been to vineyards in California and Sonoma County, and it's more about the experience. A, you pay for the tasting, and B, the wine bottles cost more than what you would go down the street to buy it from the wine shop itself. Why is our culture so pushing to make wine such a luxury item when it should be more of a cultural item? It should be something that we can appreciate more and not really base it on marketing and prices.
That's a little tough to answer. I would think that culture, tradition plays a big role. You know, wine didn't really get big in the United States or be recognized so much as world-class wine until maybe the 1970s, really, with the Judgment of Paris was huge. And you have wineries in Europe and Germany, Italy, that go back hundreds and hundreds of years, France, of course, and that culture and tradition of tastings being free or the wines being sold less. Well, that's actually that plays more of a role than it did here in the United States, or does. And I think there's a lot more of a drive. You know, we work more man hours each week in the United States. There's a little bit less relaxation time. There's a real emphasis on the dollar and profit and maximizing things. I mean, I would speculate that plays a role in it as well.
Are we drinking, as Americans, are we drinking more wine than ever? Is that number going up?
I know that we were. I think that that was the case. I think that wine is trending down a little bit currently. I think in the area that I work in and within distribution, we're seeing wine is it's flipped a little bit. Doesn't seem to be a lot. The cocktail category has really grown, but I think that you see fads and things go up and down. I think that wine was really growing for a while, and it's gone down a little bit, but I think that it'll continue to grow overall and will come back more.
Okay, so now let's get into more about the tasting and perhaps a little bit of advice on purchasing wine. And this is, at the end of the day, a seafood podcast.
Right.
So we want to talk a little bit about pairing the right wines with seafood. And usually when I think of seafood and wines, or most people think it has to be white wines, what are some of these hard and fast rules to follow when you pair seafood with wine?
When you're pairing seafood with wine, I think the first rule is, what is it that you like to drink? Because if you get headaches from red wine, or you hate red wine, don't drink red wine with any food. If you don't like white wine and you only drink red, you can find alternatives to all those things. I think the first rule is, you want to get outside your comfort zone, in the sense of maybe you want to try new things, but don't try something, you know, that you don't like. Aside from that, if you're going to pair wine with seafood, I think wine pairing is a lot more versatile than some people give it credit for, or the impression that people have. You know, there's white wine, red wine, rosé wine, bubbles, sparkling wine, fortified wine like sherries that go great pairing with seafood. But for an easy kind of go-to is a lot of sparkling wines, particularly sparkling white wine, and a lot of crisper, drier white wines are always a pretty safe bet with most seafood.
Is that because there's some fattiness in a lot of seafood, the oiliness, and perhaps that crispness is kind of just cleanses your palate as you drink it, or just complement the flavors?
I can do both, depending upon the dish of the wine. But yeah, these leaner bodied wines, these crisper wines that have more acidity to them, they're excellent at cutting through seafood or fish that is oily or fatty, or if they're accompanying like a sauce that's like creamy or rich, it'll cut through the fat. It'll cleanse the palate. It'll make you salivate. It's going to make you rather sip of wine, another bite of food, and they're going to kind of go hand in hand. A lot of seafood has components that have like a citrus component, especially like lemon. A lot of wines that are lean and crisp, that are white wines, it's good, and sparkling wines, always have a citrus component to it. Lemon is very common, so they tend to pair very well together. There's a number of white wines out there like Sauvignon Blanc or Gruner that'll have an herbal component to it. That works for a lot of citrus. It goes well with herbs. You've got other wines like Albarino or Muscadet. And Muscadet is a very classic pairing with oysters. Those wines have a bit of like a saline note to it, which can pair well with ocean seafood or salt water dishes, fish.
Yeah, and that reminds me of this one time, again, living in France for 3 years, we went down to the Burgundy region, or maybe Arcachon, where they had the oyster bays pretty much. And I just remember going there and buying these massive boxes of oysters right from the bay directly. So you knew they were fresh. And then suddenly my friend just pulled out this bottle of Loire Valley Sancerre wine. Again, crisp, lemony. You could taste the soil, the rocks, you know, in the wine itself. And I just will never forget that pairing of how well that lemony, crisp wine went so perfectly with that salty, briny oysters. Sometimes you get that magic kind of combination with food and wine. And the same thing goes with red wine when you have like a bolder wine, pairing it with something, a meat that is bold as well. And usually I tell people, the way you describe the food, those adjectives, if you can describe the wine that way too, that means it could be generally a good pairing. What do you think of that?
I'm sorry, George, you broke up a little bit on that last question. Can you repeat the last?
Yeah. So I usually say the adjectives that you describe the food that you're eating, if you can describe the wine with those same adjectives, that's a good way to pair the foods.
Absolutely. If you're pairing like a heavier body wine or a real meat rich food with a fuller body wine, it's going to go well together. If you have something light and simple, like anything from oysters to caviar to a simple appetizer, more lighter body wine is going to go well. Matching is pairing things that are complementary within each other always works well, but contrast works well also. So whereas a lighter body wine go with a lighter body fish, you could also take a lighter body wine that's going to have some really crisp acidity to it and pair it to a rich and full dish, like something that's got a cream-based sauce. Because that's going to be a great contrast where it's going to cut through the acidity, cut through the fat and enriches the dish with the acidity and make you kind of cleanse out salivate. So it kind of works in both ways, but very much so when you're pairing a likewise wine structure and your attributes to the food counterpart.
Very interesting. I never thought of it that way. If you had to cook a seafood dish and it needs wine, and without wasting a really nice bottle of Sancerre, for example, what wine would you cook a sauce for a seafood dish, for example, even if you add butter or cream to it at the end?
Well, I wouldn't use a low-quality wine. I wouldn't use a wine you've had open for a week or so in the fridge, and it started to oxidate or, you know, go brown or get kind of all the liquids. You know, what you put into your dish is going to show through it in the end result. So it's, I do recommend, you don't need to use a really world-class, really high-end bottle of wine, but I would use a nice bottle of wine when you're cooking it with Impossible. And box wine is fine with that. The way that it's sealed is it doesn't get air into it to cause it to oxidize the way it does in a bottle of wine. So I would still use a fresh wine or a nice bottle of wine when you're cooking with wine. But if you do want to kind of match the wine with what you want, the desired result of the dish. So if you are doing like a cream sauce or something with a butter sauce, an oak-aged Chardonnay, which is going to be rich and go through what's called malolactic conversion or malolactic fermentation and bring out those buttery notes, those would go well together. If you are going to do a dish that has a citrus component or like lemon, it would be good to do a dry, crisp white wine, like a steel-aged Chardonnay or Pinot Grigio. If you're going to do something that's got a lot of herbal components to it, a Sauvignon Blanc with the herbal notes in Sauvignon Blanc would work well, pair well. But you can always do kind of a more of a neutral white wine with any of those dishes, or a red wine if you're doing something with like beef or a red meat. You want to kind of, it's good to keep them similar, like you mentioned earlier, but you want to, the bottom line is make sure you're using a decent wine that's not like old or cheap or has all.
Those are great points. Really good points. I like to use box wine as well for cooking specifically, and yeah, usually pairs pretty well. And obviously, the alcohol's kind of boiling off, so it's more about the flavors and how it works with the final sauce. So I as you know, I created two dishes for Moe recently, and I want to see if we can pair it nicely with some recommendations. And I'm going to give as much of a description as possible for these dishes, and then you can tell me how you would pair this. So the first one is a smoked salmon tart. It's made with puff pastry. The border has almost like a pizza, think of it, but with puff pastries. Or there are layers of butter in it. And the border, I've kind of adhered everything bagel seasoning to it, again, to kind of go with that smoked salmon. Once it's cooked with a somewhat of a mascarpone lemon mixture in the center, so you have a little custardiness in the center. I lay out the smoked salmon, the Moe smoked salmon throughout, and then I can dot it with whatever garnishes I have. If it's red onions, cherry tomatoes, capers, maybe a little creme fraiche. I even like to drizzle it with some pomegranate molasses, again, bringing that acidity that works so well with smoked salmon. So something like this smoked salmon tart, fantastic for Easter, brunch, Mother's Day, whatever's coming up. What would you pair it with?
But smoked salmon tart, I mean, you've got a number of components there, but it also is going to go with a number of different wines. So, I mean, white wine would go really well. That's always an easy go-to when it comes to seafood. But more specifically with smoked salmon, you have a Sauvignon Blanc would go really well, especially one from France, like, say, Sancerre, you mentioned earlier, or Fumé. They're known for kind of having an earthy characteristic that is smoky or kind of Dunhill or things of that nature, which go with the smokiness in the salmon. Riesling, especially whether it's dry or slightly off dry, that would go well with the smokiness in salmon. It'd be a decent contrast. And then the citrus notes in the Riesling, and there'd be citrus notes in Sauvignon Blanc as well, would go well if you do like a lemon drizzle. If you're going to do more kind of pomegranate molasses, which is going to have a nice acidity to it, but it's also going to have probably a little bit of sweetness from the molasses. You could move more into like a rosé. That's gonna have some, still have some nice bracing acidity to it, but it's gonna have those more kind of tart red fruits like tart cherry or tart pomegranate, which pair really well. And one thing I haven't mentioned yet that's gonna go really well with, and especially with an appetizer, is gonna be sparkling wine. Whether you go something really high-end like champagne or something that'll be a little bit more modestly priced like a Cremant, which is also from France, made in a champagne style. Or Cava from Spain, which is also again made in Champagne style. Those would go really well. Prosecco from Italy would work as well, or a domestic sparkling. Those wines have great acidity, which is going to pair well. If they're going to be leaner, it's going to and the bubbles are going to cleanse the palate. It's going to make you salivate with another bite of wine. It'll go well whether you do a lemon drizzle, or if you do a glaze with the pomegranates and rosé in particular, and along with the bubbles, would go great if you are going to include those tomatoes in the smoked salmon dish. And being that all these wines are a little bit more lighter bodied, it's going to be a great start to the beginning of the meal, not fill you up too quickly. However, if you don't really care for bubbles, or if you want something a little more rich, a little more fuller bodied, you could still go with a Chardonnay, even one that's a little bit oak aged to it, one a New World or California or Australia. They're probably going to have some richer, buttery notes and still work out with the salmon, but kind of really bring out the richness that's going to be in the tart of the smoked salmon recipe.
It sounds like there's no white wine that wouldn't go with this dish almost, but that sounds fantastic. When we're going to move on to the main course, which again, I developed for Moe with their Atlantic salmon fillets. This is a sheet pan salmon dish, and I'll describe it very simply. It goes in 7-minute intervals, so everything is cooked all in one sheet pan. I start with tubers or potatoes. Pop it into the oven for 7 minutes. When it comes out, I put in a heartier vegetable like a broccoli or cauliflower in there. Pop it back into the oven, and then when it comes out, I put the Moe salmon fillets, which are again all on the same sheet pan for another 7, 8 minutes, depending how you like to cook it. And sometimes, what I like to do is to use a blackening rub on my salmons, for example, for a little bit of sweetness, bolder taste. Just so that the kids can eat too, because they just like something about brown sugar that they love. And again, that goes back into the oven. And then when you pull it out, you literally have your entire meal in this sheet pan with the salmon, the green, and or vegetables, and of course the potatoes. How would you pair this weeknight meal when the parents are drinking it? Forget the kids, of course.
Well, actually, before I answer that, George, I do have a question for you. I understand that when you're going to, you'd like to wipe the salmon place with a paper towel before you're going to put your favorite seasoning on. Is that correct?
That's absolutely true. And a lot of people ask me, why do I do that? And I'm sure that's what you're asking, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, for me, it's really important to get as much of a dry crust on the salmon. It's almost like you want to encapsulate the flavors and the omega fats, the fattiness inside the salmon. By removing that wetness, it's going to be able to encapsulate when you cook it, particularly in something like a convection oven or an air fryer, and you're going to have a dry surface. It's more appealing. The mouthfeel is better. And what you can do is very easily even drizzle a little bit of oil or spray a little bit of olive oil, let's say, on top of it. And that oil is going to adhere to the top and, again, crisp up. So for me, I always say remove the salmon and then wipe it very clean. You have a dry surface and that's going to encapsulate it. So going back into the wines that you recommend for this dish, what do you think?
Well, I think your recipes are excellent when it comes to food pairing and for salmon in general, that you're not really going to be boxed into just one or two choices, especially if you're, you know, a bit more particular when it comes to the wine that you like to drink. You're not going to, there's not going to be something that only a couple things will work and you don't care for those. Whereas, you know, the smoked salmon, I would go with sparkling, rosé, I would go with white wine. When it comes to this salmon entree dish, the sheet pan salmon, you could do all of the above. You could also throw red wine in there as well. So it kind of comes down to what are you in the mood for? And I'll dive a little bit deeper into specific wines for each category. But I'd like to mention, if you're going to do sparkling, you're going to notice in every bottle of sparkling, pretty much, you're going to see a label that'll mention how dry that sparkling wine is. Most commonly, you're going to see brut and extra dry. You won't see both. You're going to see one or the other. It's important to point out, if you're not already aware, that an extra dry wine is actually going to be not quite as dry as a wine labeled brut. There's going to be a little bit more residual sugar to it. It's not really going to taste sweet, but it's going to make the wine taste just a tiny bit sweeter, be a little bit more fruit forward. So if you find certain sparkling wines to be too dry for you and you're and turns out you've been drinking brut, you might want to try an extra dry, kind of make the fruit pop and stand a little bit more. It might be a little bit more to your liking. And then when I get to the red wines, I like to mention I'm going to only pretty much point out lighter body red wines, and especially with the sheet pan salmon you're pointing out. Because if you go with the too heavy red wine, it's not only going to overpower the dish. That red wine, heavier red wines to be have more tannin to it. Tannin, if you're not familiar with that, is there's a little bit of flavor to that, but really tannin is a texture that's coming from the grape skins. And it's the grape skins get red wine and rosé wine their color. And it's hard to describe that texture sometimes. It can be a little bit grainy. It dries the mouth out. I would doubt anyone's ever really done this, but it's probably pretty easy to picture. If you kind of picture, it's odd to say, but if you licked a piece of wood, that kind of texture, that drying is kind of what tannin is. And if you're doing a heavy red wine with salmon or with fish, especially if it's going to have the skin on it still, a red wine with a lot of tannin to it could bring out a bit of a metallic taste that'll shine through in the food and the wine itself. So when it comes to red wine, you're going to certainly go a little bit more lighter bodied and lower tannin. But to get a little bit more specific, for a sheet pan salmon, I would go a little bit more more full bodied with your white wine, a little richer, a little fuller. So this is where I would get more into Chardonnays, especially with baked salmon. You could go more New World or California Chardonnay, so a little bit more oak aged to it. So a little bit richer, a little more fuller. If Chardonnay is not your style, or you don't really care for as much kind of oak or butter nuance, Pinot Gris, which is the same grape as Pinot Grigio, but made in a different style, would work well. If you like to go to European wine, a white Rioja would work well also. Sparkling wine, I would lean more towards a rosé sparkling wine if you can find it. It's going to be a little more full-bodied, a little richer, but white sparkling would also work. Rosé wine would do well. If you can find a rosé wine that has a grape named Syrah, that's going to be a little bit richer, a little bit more fuller usual. Usually a darker colored rosé wine is a good rule of thumb. They're going to be a little richer, a little rounder, a little fuller. Usually not quite as much acidity to it. And then when it comes to red wines, I want to go a little bit more, keep it lighter bodied, as mentioned. I'd stick with kind of red wines you find in Burgundy, so namely Pinot Noir. You could also use Gamay. That's going to be found also in Burgundy, in a region called Beaujolais. Any Beaujolais is going to be the Gamay grape. Those will work really well. Those tend to be a little more the lighter side, lower tannin, so some nice braciness, acidity, some bright fruit to it. That would, you know, complement the sap.
Well, I just want to say you sound like a wonderful 500 list wine list from a restaurant. There's so many options out there, and it can be relatively confusing. And as a consumer, as a person who goes to restaurants and eats food, what I tend to do is, I know what I'm going to be ordering on the menu, and let's say it is seafood. Is it a faux pas to ask the sommelier, I would like a bottle of wine that costs this much that pairs with this food? Is that something that is inappropriate, or would you feel totally comfortable saying, sure, this is my budget, literally in that restaurant, and I want something that pairs with this food? Are you okay with that?
I'm completely okay with it. I don't think it's any faux pas at all. I mean, you're the customer. I like to go out to restaurants frequently, and you should have the experience that you want. When I worked on the Florida restaurants at the Sun, I would try to gauge that, because you never want to make the customer pay more than they're comfortable with, and you don't want to sell them short either. So when I was on the floor, I would always kind of run my finger along the column where the prices are, with a couple options when I knew what they're looking for. Say, is this something more than what you're looking for in this range or something like this? So I'm not kind of putting out or being overt, especially if there's, you know, 5-6 of the people at the table, putting someone on the spot. As a customer, when I go out to eat, if I'm talking to a som, I can always point to some of the prices. I'm looking for something in this range, or I have no problem telling someone that I'm asking for a recommendation for. You know, my sweet spot this evening, my sweet spot tonight, is $40 to $60 or $100 to $130. I got no problem with what my sweet spot is for that occasion and that evening. You know, as a som, I get to try a lot of different wine, and I look forward to it. But there are thousands and thousands and thousands of wines that I haven't tried. I like Chardonnay, but there are still thousands of different producers of Chardonnay I'm sure I have not tried. And I'm hoping, and it's almost going to be a definite, any restaurant I go to will offer some wines I've never had. So I love to ask for recommendations, but I think there's no reason to ever be shy about what you want to spend and what you're comfortable spending. And it's certainly no faux pas, whether you're at a very simple restaurant or somewhere with a Michelin star.
That's very good advice. And I appreciate that very much, because that's kind of the way I like to take it, especially with the complexity of wines. We really appreciate it, John. And before we say goodbye, what are you drinking tonight?
What am I drinking tonight? That's a great question. I actually am going to be having seafood tonight. It's not salmon, but I am very much looking forward to trying your recipe. I'm also looking forward to trying salmon pretty soon with a wasakaka sauce, if you're hearing me talk about But yes. I'm doing a little more whitefish this evening. There is a wine in Australia called Semillon, which you can also find on Bordeaux. But there's a region in Australia called Hunter Valley. And Hunter Valley is Semillon in Australia, which it's not terribly common, but any decent-sized wine shop might have one or two. Make these really beautiful white wines with real bracing acidity to them, kind of medium body, really kind of delicious notes of citrus and lemon, and even kind of key lime and things of that nature. They give a nice, long, lingering finish and really bring out the freshness in the fish and the citrus component, which I'm going to be using. So it's probably going to be $100 to me on this year.
John, are you the kind of person who has friends who literally take photos and when they're in the wine shop and say which one?
I do get that from time to time, yes.
Okay, I'm gonna need your cell phone before we finish this interview. So you're my sommelier friend, and we can, you know, when I go into a restaurant, be like, which one, John? And you just like choose for me, and I'm done with it.
Anytime, I'm happy to do it. It's just fun for
me. All right, well, thank you very much, John Young from Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits of Maryland. What a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for helping us choose the right wine, particularly with seafood.
You as well, George. Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
You bet. Now, don't forget, folks, you can catch past and future episodes of Decoding Seafood by Moe by subscribing now on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you cast your net for captivating content. We hope you enjoy diving deep into the world of wine tasting today. Until next time, bon appetit and happy seafood exploring.